Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. A new exhibition at the Bronx Museum of the Arts is one of the first major surveys of the artist Darryl Ellis, whose work faded into obscurity after he died from complications from AIDS in 1992. Darryl Ellis was a local. He was born and raised in the South Bronx, and he spent most of his short life in New York City. His life was bookended by tragedy. A few months before he was born, his father, Thomas Ellis, a photographer, was shot and killed by plainclothes police officers. As a kid, Darryl Ellis loved drawing, and as he grew up, he became a well-known figure in the 80s downtown art scene. He was also a dedicated journaler and compiled more than 50 notebooks in a short period, including sketches, short entries, and ideas. His writing is on view as part of this show. The show, co-organized with the Baltimore Museum of Art, is called Darryl Ellis Regeneration. It's on view now at the Bronx Museum and runs through September 10th. Joining me now in studio is Antonio Sergio Bessa, Chief Curator Emeritus of the Bronx Museum of the Arts. Antonio, nice to meet you.
You too.
And Leslie Cozy, Curator of Prints, Drawings, and Photographs at the Baltimore Museum of Art. Leslie, welcome to the studio.
Thank you. It's a thrill to be here.
So Darryl was born and raised in the South Bronx. He would return home for stints to live with his mother and his sister in their apartment. Sergio, where do we see the Bronx in his work? How do we know he is a young man of the Bronx?
I think you'll see the Bronx in the amazing portrait that he did of his family. And that was one of the things that excited me the most to collaborate with Leslie in this exhibition, because it's such a beautiful, positive picture of a Bronx family. So it's the Bronx is all over. For example, to be very specific, one of the works on view is a series of variations that he did on a photograph of his sister in Crotona Park holding a toy bunny. It's Crotona Park is just a few blocks away from the Bronx Museum. So we can make that kind of connection with the community all the time through his work.
Leslie, what did you learn about the Bronx from being part of this project, then through his work? What did you come to understand about the Bronx, and especially the time when he was flourishing?
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting. I think for Ellis, a lot of his work was a meditation on change and thinking about a kind of idyllic post-war image of a family life and of Black life and domesticity that he didn't actually get to experience. And because of the loss of his father and the changes that his family suffered, he experienced a lot of alienation and displacement. And so I think, in a sense, you kind of experience the social history of not just the Bronx, but of a large portion of Black America through his work.
Sergio, how did Darryl Ellis fit into the wider Bronx art movement of his time?
It's so interesting, this question, and I think it's still a puzzle for all of us, not only Leslie and myself, but for all the curators that will come, because he was a very odd fit in not only in terms of the Bronx, but also in terms of downtown New York. So you are talking about a period when, young artists were interested in graffiti or hip-hop and they are going into conceptual art and minimalism. And Darryl was focusing on his family. So his vision, in a sense, is very bourgeois, if you allow me that.
Sure.
But that bourgeois sense of French 19th century, which was, the period that I think he talked to him the most. So he was kind of an odd fit. But having said that, he was in an exhibition at Fashion Moda, which was this gallery in South Bronx, ran by Joe Louis and Stephen Innes, and it was a hub for all these up and coming artists like John Ahern was there, and you name it. So he was there right at the time. But would people be interested in buying a drawing that he made of his mother? You know, that's the big question.
Leslie, when we think about those drawings he made, it notes in the catalog that he's been drawing since he was in elementary school. What was he interested in drawing? How was he drawing? How was he expressing himself artistically as even a child?
Well, you know, it's interesting because there's a very highbrow aspect to his drawing, and then there's a very popular aspect to his drawing. And he was teaching himself the history of art through his drawings. He was going to the Met and sketching, you know, Tullio Lombardo's Adam, one of the first freestanding sculptures in the round. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, he was also interested in fashion illustration. So he was interested in pop culture. He was interested in at one point in his life, he explored the possibility of doing theater costumes. So he really was kind of thinking through different segments of the world through his drawing. And there's a lot about his drawing that is, I think, also a process of translation. He's drawing from his own photographs. He's drawing from his father's photographs. Mm-hmm. So he's also, I think, thinking about drawing as an act of bridging different media.
Yeah, it's interesting. He went to the High School of Fashion Industries, which was, you know, recently profiled in the New York Times. They called it the Hogwarts of fashion. Sort of this unknown but very influential, you know, I think one of the lines in the article says, everybody talks about LaGuardia, but this is one of the best kept secrets in New York, and how you have these wonderful fashion shows during Fashion Week and around Fashion Week. And one of the educators that's quoted in the catalog about Darryl Ellis at this time was that most of the students at the school at this time were Black girls. And Darryl was one of the few boys, and he knew he was gay. Leslie, what was his life like as a teenage Black queer aspiring artist? And I think we're talking the 70s at this point.
Yeah, the late 70s. I mean, I think it's hard to say. I think there were two poles, and we've heard different versions of Darryl from different people that knew him. There were people that said, oh, he was really quiet, he was really shy. And then there are people that said, oh, he was the life of the party. So I think in some instances, you know, there was that sense of being a little bit isolated and sort of not accepted. And I think certainly within his community, you know, there were struggles with that, and even to some degree within his own family. But then, he also became part of an art scene in which queer artists were hugely influential, and his work and him personally, I think he was really dear to them. So it's an interesting dialectic of integration and isolation.
Did you want to add something, Sergio?
Yes. It's exactly what Leslie said, that he had this, he was shy or this and that, and he was definitely afraid of his mother, let's say, judgment of his choices. But at the same time, you see a very courageous young man braving in this, you know, newfound kind of a scene. Mm-hmm. And just to give you a few examples, he met James Wanzi in a gay bar. James Wanzi was a photographer.
James
Vandersee,
famous, yeah.
Oh, James Wanzi.
Oh, I thought you said James Vandersee. I was like, James Vandersee.
No.
Oh, my goodness.
It's another period. But together with James, they apply for a studio space at PS1. Mm-hmm. And they got started, you know, around that time, which I believe was 1979. And he spent 2 years working at PS1 with James, experimenting, and a couple of years after that, he's accepted at the Whitney program of independent study program. So he was very geared. It is my opinion, and I hope Leslie will agree, he knew he wanted to do something very big. Mm. And as you see in the catalog, he was photographed by Mapplethorpe and Peter Hujar. Mm-hmm. So he was part of that scene. But at the same time, he didn't want to be seen as that, you know, eye candy, you know, for photographers like Hujar and Mapplethorpe. And he wanted to show his work on his own way.
We are discussing the exhibit Daryl Ellis Regeneration, which is on view at the Bronx Museum of the Arts until September 10th. My guests are Antonio Sergio Besa, Chief Curator Emeritus of the Bronx Museum of Arts, and Leslie Cosey, Curator of Prints, Drawings, and Photographs at the Baltimore Museum of Art. This show is a collaboration between the two institutions. I did want to follow up on something that you mentioned, Leslie. You talked about him going to the various institutions here in the city, the Met, the Whitney, and, you know, art students do that. They go and they draw, yeah. And it's all very, you know, in the 70s, still Euro and Anglo-centric. Mm-hmm. Did he express any thoughts about that as he was working on his work, that he was, you know, being sent to learn the masters, and the masters were all European and white?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. He was very cognizant of it, and he writes in his journals about wanting to think through 19th century portraiture and domestic scenes and points to specific works that he wants to reference, but also talks about that absence and the sort of different valence of painting himself as a black subject and his family as black subjects. And so I think for him, part of his process was an attempt at canon correction, which is really interesting because I think it anticipates what the museum's, what we're trying to do in the
museum
world today.
Someone's calling to tell you you're on the radio. Sergio, do you know you're on public radio right now? Continue, Leslie.
Well, yeah, just that. That's really the main point, that I think he sort of was understanding what those gaps were. He in the early 80s, in 83, he also worked as an educator at the Whitney Museum of Art in their Arts Reach program. And one of the things that we can tell that he did from his journals is really try to revamp that curriculum to include really significant black American artists, including James Van Der Zee. So I think he was somebody that, really understood those absences. And then you see those absences physically, visually, formally in the work, in all those, you know, empty spaces where people's faces are obscured.
Sergio, how would you describe his reputation as an artist at the time, in real time?
At the time, I think he might have been seen as the, you know, the next big thing that could happen, but it just kept not happening. I think there was the difficulty of facing a system that was, you know, mostly white male, but also I think there was a lot of self-doubt. You know, there is, you're seeing them in the notebooks, and also from talking to people that knew at the time, he was plagued with the uncertainty about the value of what he was doing. Yeah. And that, I think, was a kind of a big part of it.
Yeah, because his work was so different, I think, from what his contemporaries were doing. And I think in a way, a lot of his contemporaries understood and valued his contributions. And that's why the work has been saved. That's why that archive still exists. Mm-hmm. Thanks to people like Alan Frame and others who saved that work. But yeah, there was a very different sensibility to that work that I think made him something of an outlier artistically.
There's also, you know, you mentioned previously that his interest in 19th century and going to the Met and the classics. So he was also part of a small group of friends who thought alike. You know, like Miguel Ferrando, who's an artist who also died of AIDS, unfortunately, a few years before Daryl. They were good friends from high school. Miguel was born in New York, but from a Dominican Republic family. And he was Daryl's buddy, going to the Met and copying. I had a chance to go see his work at his sister's house. And it's drawings and drawings of copies of, you know, classics from the Met. Also, Richard Brinsenhoff, another artist from New York at the time, very good friend of Daryl. So I think all these men, they were kind of interested in beauty, which is so interesting, and in mastery and skill, which was, you know, in the 70s and 80s, it was being decried as that. You know, everyone was going to sort of copy photographs or draw from theory and things like that, and that Dara was interested in the craft, in making things, yeah. You know. So
I want to circle back to a little bit of biography, Leslie. As I mentioned, his father was a photographer, was shot and killed by plainclothes police. Do we know the circumstance?
Well, I think from what I understand from his family, I think he was beaten to death. In a kind of traffic-related altercation by plainclothes police officers. And one of the, in addition to the tragedy of it, one of the great ironies was that he had just been accepted into the police academy. There's some really interesting imagery in the exhibition around men in uniform. And Daryl's father had also been a Marine. Many men in their family were police officers or had served in the armed forces. So there's a really sad aspect to, you know, a family that, like, had this tradition of service and the intention of continuing it and then, you know, having that whole life destroyed by a kind of obscene and just unnecessary act of violence.
His mother, Sergio, his mother gives him many of his father's photographs. Why was this an important moment in his artistic career?
Oh, it's pivotal. It's an amazing moment. And I believe that Leslie can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was when he entered the Whitney Independent Study Program, and I think she saw that, you know, he wanted to pursue art. And when he saw the archives of photographs and negatives, he rediscovered a family that he hadn't known. So if you can report to that period in his life, he grew up in grief, you know. His mother was probably extremely depressed, a very strong woman, by the way, who kind of kept the family together, you know, throughout all the tragedy. But I think for him to receive the archives of his father and slowly kind of research that, it was not only a discovery in terms of his own work, of the visual work that he wanted to do, but also of himself as a person. And he would also kind of could think of the situations of black families in that, in your post-war America, and how hard it was to be part of the big American dream, you know.
We're discussing Daryl Ellis Regeneration, which is now at the Bronx Museum of the Arts. My guests are curators Antonio Sergio Bessa and Leslie Cosi. Why is it called Regeneration? Why is that the right title for this show, Leslie?
Well, I have to say, we owe the credit to one of my colleagues who identified that phrase in Daryl Ellis's an interview that he gave in the late 90s, early 90s. I think 1991, shortly before he died, where he talks about his photographs as an act of regeneration. So we're drawing on his own words and his hope that the photographs would create that lifeline to a past that he didn't get to experience.
It's extraordinary to have these 52 notebooks full of information. Sergio, did any certain themes emerge?
Oh, many.
Yeah.
Many.
What were some of the themes that emerged?
Well, first of all, I already mentioned his feeling of doubt of, you know, about his work or this and that. So there is that kind of continuous line of that. But particularly at some point, you'll see him just focusing on his work and what he wants to do with the work and how he's going to do it. And I have to say, you know, words apart and compare, but it reminds me a little bit of notes by someone like Leonardo da Vinci that was kind of creating some techniques to achieve what he wants to achieve. Or, you know, so the books are absolutely fabulous. And I have to say that was one of the things that drew me the most to do this exhibition was when I found when I saw the books, I was just like, this is amazing. And, you know, throughout the books, he criticized what he sees as what's going wrong in the art scene, sort of a formalism for formalism's sake.
Yeah.
Because he's a very formalistic artist, but there is a reason behind the form, mm-hmm. constantly.
Yeah. And there's also, I think, a really spiritual element to the notebooks. I mean,
yes.
the first time he, there's a notebook from 1983 where he writes, "Do I have AIDS?" And, you know, so he spends the, you know, he has a very short career. It's mm-hmm. sort of Van Gogh-like, to make another, mm-hmm. you know, genius comparison. But he spends a lot of his career sort of dealing with trauma in terms of his own HIV status. And wondering about it. And so he Sergio writes in the catalog essay about his experimentation with the I Ching. He's mm-hmm. really looking to Eastern philosophy to try to find answers and perhaps healing. Mm-hmm. So it's a really interesting mix of art and diet and spirituality.
Yeah. and books that he needs to read. And yeah. the books that he
and
needs
curriculum.
To read are just like amazing. It's like Derrida. And you know, he's talking about the 80s. Or read Derrida, read Carl Jung, and read this. And it's yeah. just, it's a snapshot of a brain, like, you know, constant. Bubbling. It's yeah. just beautiful.
The name of the show is Darryl Ellis Regeneration. It is at the Bronx Museum of the Arts. It's on view until September 10th. My guests have been Antonio Sergio Bessa, Chief Curator Emeritus of the Bronx Museum of the Arts, and Leslie Cozy, Curator of Prints, Drawings, and Photographs at the Baltimore Museum of Art. It was a collaboration between the two institutions. Thank you so much to both of you for coming to the studio, and I hope folks get a chance to go to the Bronx and see the show.
Thank you. Open house tomorrow. Please come.
Open house tomorrow. Please go.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.